Religious freedom is protected by the U.S. Constitution. It's the very First Amendment. And yet one particular religious sect has dominated our politics and shaped our nation's laws, Protestant Christianity. How this happened is the subject of a new book by Francis Fitzgerald, The Evangelicals. It's about the rise and influence of America's largest religious movement. And Francis Fitzgerald joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you go back to the beginning of the association between Protestant Christianity or evangelicalism and politics. But when did that really begin? Was there a time when religion was truly divorced from politics in this nation?
I don't think there was, no. Certainly just after the revivals of the Great Awakenings, which, you know, turned people into evangelicals. Evangelicals were the leaders of all the reform movements, reforming criminal justice system, care for the indigent. They created the public education system in the United States, and the Northerners were largely abolitionists.
Now, are you talking about the first Great Awakening going back to, like, the 1730?
No, well, this was after the Revolution. During the first Great Awakening, it was rather more intra-religious politics. These evangelical preachers were very anti-establishment in terms of their churches, and they posed sort of direct threats to the subsidies that went from the states to the churches at that time.
So I want to fast forward quite a bit, a couple hundred years or so, to the time when people start thinking about the connection between evangelicals and politics. We start to think almost immediately of Billy Graham and Pat Robertson. How did, and it appears from your book at least, that this was strategic on the part of some leaders in the church to make a very intentional connection with politics. Why?
Well, I don't think that it had ever really stopped. I mean, you know, there was a moment when, after the great divide between the liberal churches and the fundamentalist churches, the fundamentalists, you know, seemed to disappear, but in fact, they didn't at all. They were building their own churches, their own fiefdoms. A lot of them were very much involved in politics. I mean, the man who really brought evangelical or fundamentalism, rather, to the South was very much involved with both of Franklin Roosevelt and his opponent. And so I think it's something that's never really stopped. I mean, from time to time, there are not a lot of people who are concerned about politics as religious people. And that did last for quite some time. But then a movement arises, and the movement was really Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson with the Christian Right. It was not Billy Graham who had his own politics, but he didn't lead a popular movement.
Well, let's hear Pat Robertson here.
There developed in Watergate, in our audience, and in the nation, a very serious distrust of government, and I don't think it's been restored yet. We don't have the bright, shiny-eyed idealism and patriotism there once was. There's a cynicism that is set in about government, and I think that it came out of that period.
So what was Pat Robertson's strategy? How did he go about aligning himself with politicians and wielding influence?
Well, extraordinary. I mean, he first of all created an enormous empire of television and radio and so forth, and he was very innovative in communications. He then ran for president in 1988. That was really the first time people outside his own audiences had heard of him. He didn't get all that far. But after that, he started something called the Christian Coalition, which was probably the most effective evangelical group in politics at the time.
Now, and how was that different, the Christian Coalition of Pat Robertson, how was that different from the Moral Majority, which was a political organization founded by Jerry Falwell?
Well, they both had pretty much the same aims. It was just that the Christian Coalition was better led. It was more strategic. Jerry Falwell was a separatist fundamentalist, and he found it hard to attract people who were of other faiths, except for some Southern Baptists. But Pat Robertson, who was charismatic, but who had this enormous, enormous television show, was able to attract people of all kinds of different evangelical denominations.
So let me play you this comment from Robert Jones. He is part of an organization that studies religion, and his book was called The End of White Christian America. Here's what he had to say.
I think that is the key to really understanding this cultural shift. I mean, you know, from the beginning of the country, I think it's important to remember the power not just that white Christianity had, but white Protestant Christianity had. If you look at the early, you know, Constitutional Congress and members of Congress early in the country, all the way through really the middle of the 20th century, it was really white Protestants that had power in the country. There's this great line in one of the books as I was doing research by a historian said, if you were in charge of something big and important all the way up through the middle of the 20th century, chances are you were white, male, and Protestant.
So was this just a function of the fact that if you were white, male, and Christian, you were automatically going to, I mean, you were dominant in the United States, or was there something else at play here?
Well, I mean, he doesn't make a distinction between Protestant, liberal Protestants and evangelical Protestants. And I don't think there was much of one until the fundamentalist modernist clash around the First World War, but I think that to a great degree the movement that Falwell and Robertson started was a reaction to the new pluralism, to the fact that Catholics, Jews, people of no faith, whatever, were moving into power, taking their place in the whole spectrum of U.S. Government and business, and changing the laws, because the laws had been made by Protestants, and they tended to reflect their particular biases, and so these were to be changed to make the state more neutral, as opposed to, you know, being essentially a work of the Protestants.
So, all right. So we get to this point in which evangelicals, specifically evangelicals in the Christian religion, had already established for hundreds of years this relationship with politics and this relationship with politician. So let's move forward to 2017. How much of our laws are based on evangelical beliefs? How much is evangelical belief part of our everyday life and how we go about proceeding?
Well, that's a very good question, because it's an unstable answer to it, because the laws have been changing, particularly laws related to sexuality and privacy and religious freedom, whatever that is actually means, and when that it's not entirely clear, but I'd say until the 1940s that the great bulk of laws which had to do with morals was absolutely evangelical Protestant.
So you're saying most of the laws we have today that have to do with governing behaviors are based on the evangelical philosophy?
Well, yes, but as I say, it's been changing because they've had to become more neutral as a result of the recognition of large amounts of Catholics,
right,
and so on.
And, of course, we've talked before in the show about the fact that the numbers of evangelical Christians have been dwindling, especially here in Georgia and the rest of the South. Thank you so much to Frances Fitzgerald. She's author of The Evangelicals, The Struggle to Shape America. She'll speak at the Atlanta History Center at 8 on Wednesday. Frances, thank you.
Thank you.